What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson. Let's get this started.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This week, we're going to be talking about creatine, and specifically who should be taking it, how to take it, benefits, things like that. But first, let's do a little check-in. So, Tom, what's going on with you?
So, I've been listening to the book, Good Calories, Bad Calories by Gary Taubes.
Great book.
So, the sugar from fruit. How do you say that?
Fructose.
That's how I say it, too. I've only heard it called fructose. So, for the last, like, five chapters, he's been talking about it a shit ton, probably mentioning it in every single paragraph. He calls it fructose.
Oh, no, let's not do that.
And I don't know, I can't get past it. Every single time I'm here, I'm like, what the hell is he saying? What is he talking about? And it's like...
Is a speaker from, like, England or some shit? Like, across the...
Maybe. He doesn't have a strong accent, but he does have a slight accent.
Yeah, they do switch words a little bit.
Yeah, so it's, I don't know, that's been a real, just, like, bugaboo. I've been trying to get past it.
Yeah, when you're listening to something, that can really throw you off.
Yeah, the book is great so far. It definitely outlines a lot of how the science got translated wrong and stuff like that. It's a great read. I'm about halfway through it.
Did you get to the World War II stuff? You remember that?
In regards to what?
Like how the Germans pretty much had it figured out, then Hitler came and everything pretty much got destroyed?
Not yet, but there's a lot of similar stuff to that. Pretty much the U.S. is stupid when it comes to nutritional sciences. The rest of the world got it wrong. And it's mostly just political agendas, which is why...
You mean the rest of the world got it right. We just say they got it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Well, a lot of... I mean, with nutrition, nobody really studied nutrition because it hasn't been an issue up until recently. Most of the time, like, if you were sick, it's because you weren't getting enough food up until, like, the past 150, 200 years.
Yeah, obesity wasn't a problem in 1900.
Yeah, I mean, unless you were a king and just eating way too much. But, like, a lot of those issues really haven't become a problem until... With, like, the everyday man for, like, the last 100 years, 150 years or so.
Yeah, that's true.
So, nobody really cared about nutrition a whole lot. That's it for me. What about you?
This week, I went to Brazilian Steakhouse this week. I didn't tell you about that, huh?
Oh, you told me you were going. You didn't tell me.
Yeah, so, at a Brazilian Steakhouse, it's, like, an all-you-can-eat meat place, and,
They have sides there, too. They have a little salad bar.
They do, yeah. And actually, yeah, I guess that's a good place to start. So we walk in and sit down. We've never been there before. And the place is kind of fancy. It was expensive as shit, but...
Do they have those, like, stoplight blocks? Green, yellow, red?
Yeah. Okay. It's just green and red at this one, yeah. And we sit down at the table. No one kind of says anything. And a few minutes later, I kind of wave down the waiter. I'm like, hey, can I get a plate? Like, what's going on? Like, oh, you have to go up and get one at the salad bar. And I was like, oh, I don't want salad. And my wife didn't either. You know, she was just down there just to get the meat as well. I'm like, oh, okay. So they bring us a plate. And then we start ordering. And or not even ordering. We just start having dudes walk up to our table with sticks of meat. And I don't know. It was just the pace was crazy fast. Like, dudes showed up every 10 seconds, and I was just pretty much eating as fast as I could. Because I went into it like a, almost like a competition. Like, I really was thinking it was like, I'm going to put down as much as I can. Especially how expensive it was, I wanted to make sure I spent my money well. But, I don't know, I just didn't really like it, man. Like, they had ribeye there, they had, like, bacon wrap filet mignon, they had, like... some good cuts of meat, but they also have like sirloin and like shrimp and like just some basic pork stuff. And you know they brought out more of.
Well, of course they're going to bring out the cheaper stuff.
The cheaper stuff, right? And I already get like primetime beef. So I'm like, I'm only here for these good cuts. And I don't know, they just gave me like real small slices of ribeye, real small slices of anything good. When the sirloin came around, they were giving you like 10 pounds of it. And I was just like, okay, I see what's going on here. And it just kind of bugged me, you know? And but I did eat a lot. Like, I put down as much as I could. And I would just never go back. Like, it was $62 a person. And I'm sure I ate more than 3 pounds. So think of it like $20 a pound. But it's just not worth it. Like, I wouldn't recommend it. Unless you're me. Like, and you can put down 3 or maybe 4 pounds. Maybe it's worth it as far as financially. But for most people, I don't think it's worth it.
So there's a couple, like, ways you can kind of get around that. You go for lunch instead of dinner. It's about It's not half the price, but it's going to be a lot cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you won't get that bacon-wrapped filet. Maybe you won't have, like, some special duck delicacy, something along those lines. But majority of the meat will still be there. You can still get your prime rib. You can still get your sirloin. I'm sure they'll have some, like, New York or something like that. So you can kind of do that around it. But, yeah, I agree when it comes to buying steak. Like, I eat steak almost probably, like, 4 or 5 nights for dinner out of the week. Going to the store or going to a restaurant, having to spend 10 times the amount on a cut that's half the size of what I'm used to. Like, yeah, I just don't do it.
Yeah, it didn't make sense. Yeah.
Last couple of times I've gone out to eat, just because I don't normally cook a lot of salmon at home or any sort of fish at home. I know I should. Usually I just get salmon, something like that. That way I'm not upset with myself that I ordered a $40 steak that's half the size of what I'm used to.
Yeah. No, they did have salmon too at this place. Yeah, so I guess I got salmon there too. But yeah. I don't know. I'll never go back. If something, like you said, lunch or maybe like a $45 deal, then I would maybe think about going back. But
yeah, maybe there's a Groupon for it.
Yeah, something like that. Then maybe I would, but just didn't like it. And it's hard to really, like, conversate with somebody when you have a bunch of dudes walking up to your table every 10 seconds. And I know you can put the red card down. I get that. But even just the whole atmosphere in that place was, hurry up. Here's your food. Hurry up and eat it. And hurry up and get out. That's what it felt like. It wasn't a place you kind of, like, hang out and have a conversation.
Oh, yeah, I get that.
It was very much like, hurry, 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 now go. And I was like, oh, I just didn't like it, you know? But, yeah. I guess prior to that, we went on a hike, like, up in some, like, regional park up in Auburn. And I don't know if you know.
How was the air up there?
Yeah, it was actually fine. Okay. But if you don't know, California is, like, burning to the ground right now.
I know we've probably mentioned that. These are different fires. I feel like California's been on fire the entire time that we've had this podcast.
Yeah, it feels that way. But it's definitely really smoky. So the night before, me and my wife didn't think we were going to go hiking because of the air quality. So I woke up the next day, again, thinking we weren't going to go hiking. So I trained legs that morning. I woke up real early, felt fine, trained my legs. And right now my leg days are really long. So did all that. As soon as I'm done training, it's around like 6:30 or so, my wife gets up and she's like, oh, I checked the air quality. It's fine. We're going to go hiking. And I was like, okay. You know, so, and at this point, I felt fine. I ate like my cod. I just had cod and eggs and not a lot of calories. It was not a lot of refuel and there was no time off. It was like 30 minutes. I ate, then we left to go hiking. We went hiking for like 3 hours. Again, felt fine while hiking. I get back home. I'm exhausted. I'm so tired. I go lay down in bed. I fall asleep, and maybe 5 minutes later, literally every muscle from my waist down cramped up. My quads, my hamstrings, my calves, my feet, everything just locked up, right? And obviously, I was super fatigued. I was not recovered from my leg workout, let alone this 3-hour hike, you know? So I crawled to the kitchen. I took some like electrolyte powder, and pretty much the rest of the day, I was cramping up until I went and had that steak dinner. So that kind of sucked.
You didn't do like a salt shot or anything while you were home?
Oh, I did. Yeah, I did a lot of salt. I did a lot of potassium. And I wasn't like cramping horribly, but I felt very shot. You know what I mean? Just like my legs were very shot, especially my calves. So that sucked. But yeah, so I guess that's all that's new with me this week. All right, so now let's get to the topic of the podcast today, which is creatine. So creatine, some people think it's some, I don't know, steroid or some sort of like magic hormone, some magic pill that, you know, gym bros take. But in all actuality, we're all producing it every day. It's made from 3 amino acids, glycine, arginine, and methionine. So it's not like a PED. It's not something that's abnormal. It's perfectly normal, perfectly natural. Most people are going to produce like 2 to 3 grams a day. In total, like a typical average 70-kilogram guy, which are like 140, 150 pounds, is probably going to have 120 grams in their body. We lose about 2 to 3 grams a day. Specifically, creatine will spontaneously convert into creatinine, and then we'll just pee that out. So our body replaces that by those amino acids. Creatine is mainly stored in the muscles. 90% of it is stored in the muscles. And that really revolves around just ATP synthesis. It acts kind of like a buffer for our ATP. It makes everything more efficient. And Yeah, what do you think about it?
So it's one of like the most studied supplements out there. We've been using it for quite a while. There's a lot of different studies on performance, on side effects. To me, it makes sense if you're either a vegetarian, you should definitely be supplementing with it, because the only real like source of food is going to be muscle meat. You can get a little bit from your organs, but you're really just going to be getting it from steak, chicken legs, a little bit in eggs. I was kind of disappointed that eggs were so far down the list, because it seems like eggs are at the top of the list for damn near everything.
Yeah, herring is actually at the top of the list. So specific fish, herring. I don't know why, but herring has the most creatine out of everything.
Probably muscle. I would, most fish, super muscly. Yeah, most fish are extremely strong. Mm. I mean, if you've ever been fishing, like, you can get overpowered by a little 20, 25 pound fish.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're designed.
Just all little balls of muscle.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're just going to store it all in your muscle. I think there's two reasons why like 90, 95% of it is stored in our muscle. Our muscle makes up how much of our body, like over 50% of the mass on our body is just straight muscle.
Yeah.
So that's one. And then it's mostly going to be stored in areas where we need like very low energy. And then all of a sudden we need a ton of energy. So yeah, your muscles, you're not using them. You're sitting down. They're not contracted. Oh shit, here's a tiger. I need to sprint away. Fully engaged, you know, areas like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. So creatine kinase, which is the enzyme that breaks down creatine and releases the phosphate group for energy, is found in systems that have highly fluctuating energy demands. So like Tom said, your muscles, which is like obvious reasons, you know, we need to run now. But other areas that people really don't think about would be like our stomach for gastric acid secretion. You know, that's very demand or energy demand driven. And something like our gut, which is about like absorption of nutrients and secretion of enzymes. Like when that happens, when we get a huge meal in our body, our gut all of a sudden becomes active and a lot of ATP is needed and creatine comes in there to help out.
Yeah. So for like, depending on how you eat, most likely you're not eating 24 hours out of the day. So if you're eating 2-3 big meals a day, a good amount of time, like 16 hours, your digestive system isn't really doing anything. And then all of a sudden, here comes a 1 pound steak with a bunch of broccoli and butter coming along with it. Now, all of a sudden, that energy demand is really high. That's why, like, it's in areas where it fluctuates. That's why it is so important with our stomach and intestines.
Yeah, that's true. That actually shows up. It's actually really rare, but there is a creatine deficiency disorder. So it's a genetic disorder where people just don't produce enough creatine. And so people with creatine biosynthesis disorders, they experience global developmental delays. So that means both cognitive and physical delays across the board. One of the main issues is gastrointestinal issues, so vomiting, feeding difficulties, and acid reflux. And when I read the acid reflux part, that really stood out to me because I know everyone assumes acid reflux is about your stomach producing too much acid, but that's not true. And it honestly doesn't make any sense. If you think about what hormone our body makes more of as we age, like, do you know what hormone does our body make more of as we age? Like, say, more when we're 80 than when we're 20.
Hormone?
It's pretty much none. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, right?
Yeah, I was trying to think. I was like, nothing comes to mind.
Yeah, exactly. Because as our body becomes more and more compromised, we produce less and less of these hormones. But how many 19-year-olds do you know that are on some sort of, like, antacid? Very few.
Yeah, they don't need to be.
How many 80-year-olds are antacids?
I feel like around 30 is when I started hearing some of my friends start complaining about having heartburn and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Like 30 is probably like that magic number when it first starts popping up.
Yeah, so if you just look at that and then you step back and like, hold on, so you're telling me we produce more stomach acid as we get older? That makes no sense. So we actually produce less. And so that actually can cause things like acid reflux and GERD and... There are different mechanisms involved in that, but it's definitely not caused by too much stomach acid. So creatine being involved in the production of making our stomach more acidic is vital. It's very important because we need a very acidic stomach. One, there's like an acid barrier. So everything we, as far as like breathing through our nose or mouth, everything we eat, it hits our stomach first. And the more acidic our stomach is, the more like defense we have against the outside world. So anything that gets into our system, the acid in our stomach will just kill it. Our stomach's very acidic. Some cases a pH of 1. So, I mean, you can drop a nail on a pH of 1 and that nail will disappear eventually. You know, it really is that acidic. Also, our stomach releases an enzyme called pepsinogen, and then the acid in our stomach actually turns it into pepsin, and that's the active form that helps our body absorb proteins and break them down to those specific amino acids. So as we age, our body slowly absorbs less and less of the protein we eat. So again, creatine can help with someone like that as far as we get older and producing more and more stomach acid.
All right, let me just kind of touch upon that. So the reason that not enough stomach acid is what causes you to have heartburn, GERD, any of those type of diseases is symptoms.
Conditions, yeah.
So if you eat some meat or pretty much any food, your stomach acid is going to break it down. And once your stomach's determined that that food is broken down enough, it releases it into the small intestine. Well, if it's not breaking down fast enough, then that acid is just staying on that food and staying in your stomach a lot longer. And then the sphincter that's at your esophageal...
Lower esophageal sphincter.
Yeah, it's just not... It's strong, but it's not strong enough to prevent everything from popping up. And just a little bit of acid that touches your esophagus is going to hurt. Your esophagus isn't built to be... to stand up to all that acid that's in your
stomach. Not at all.
And also, like, animals like vultures, something that eats dead animals, they have a much lower pH value of their stomach than something like us. They need that added acidity to break down any sort of bacteria that's in that rotting flesh. We don't eat rotting flesh. We eat stuff pretty fresh, cooked. Right after the kill. Mm-hmm. And then we cook it too, which also damages a lot of that bacteria. So your dog is going to have a much lower pH value in their stomach than something like us.
You know, that's really not true. Do you know that?
What, the dog?
Yeah. Like a hyena, we have a very similar pH to a hyena.
Isn't a hyena some sort of dog?
Yeah, it's a scavenger. So that eats like raw flesh. So we have damn near the exact same pH as a hyena.
My dogs can process bones. Can we process bone?
Oh, for sure we could.
Okay.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that's not true. Sorry. But I get where you're going with that. But we have a very similar GI tract to carnivores in our stomach pH. We can't get that much more acidic than a pH of 1.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not like the scale goes below 0.
So we haven't lost some of that ability because we've been cooking for millions of years, or a million years, roughly, but dogs haven't been eating cooked food?
No, our stomach pH is still very acidic. So let's say average maybe 2, some cases maybe 1. So our stomach is still very acidic. Yeah. And we can talk about that in another podcast. We can talk about as far as... I do want to talk about stomach acid in general, but we have, as far as things that eat meat, vultures, things like that, we have very similar stomach situations. Now, cows and sheep and ruminants, we do not have very similar stomach pHs because they're not designed to eat meat. But things that are designed to eat meat have very low stomach acids. I should say very low pHs. I should say that means they're more acidic. But, I want to touch on specifically what creatine does. It kind of, the main energy molecule in our cell is ATP. So that's what our body uses to kind of fuel everything. When our body uses ATP, it produces ADP, which is like a diphosphate. There's only 2 phosphate groups on it. So it needs an extra one. And our body stores creatine as creatine phosphate. So it stores creatine with an extra phosphate group on it. So in the muscle, there's an enzyme called creatine kinase. And when ATP is around and our body needs ATP, that enzyme will take off that phosphate group and add that energy released from that enzymatic reaction will combine ADP with that phosphate to create ATP. So it gives our body just a bigger pool of ATP and making things just more efficient than without it. Also, just our cells are very aqueous. You know, I forget what's the statistic, how much of our weight is body is water? Like, how much are we, 90%?
70, somewhere.
Yeah, so it's high as shit, right?
A lot.
So we're mainly water. So the thing about ADP and ATP, they don't diffuse through water very readily, but creatine does. So creatine phosphate diffuses through water 7 times faster than ATP, and creatine phosphate is like the high energy form of creatine. And creatine itself, without the phosphate group in it, diffuses through water 2,000 times faster than ADP. So it just makes sense that we have this molecule in our body to transport these phosphate groups around a million times faster than any ATP or ADP would do solely. So it's just pretty cool. I didn't know that about how fast creatine can diffuse through fluid. You know, something I learned just researching this, you know?
Yeah, that's something I didn't know either.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And something we touched on last week as far as like CoQ10 and the mitochondria and how, you know, vital that is. Again, everyone should take CoQ10. If you're out there, you're over 35, feel free to supplement with it. But our body produces most of the free radicals we experience in a day, our body produces themselves, specifically in complex 1 and 3 of the electron transport chain. And those electrons can get backed up and they kind of bounce out of the electron transport chain if everything's not running smoothly. So creatine helps keep that demand running smoothly. So we don't want a lot of ATP in the mitochondria because then the mitochondria gets backed up. There's no demand, there's no flow, there's no gradient. So at the end of the electron transport chain, we need a high concentration of ADP there to keep things flowing. And that's what creatine does. It goes to the mitochondria and there's ATP there. The creatine kinase enzyme converts that ATP to ADP and then ships it back to the muscle. So the a concentration in the mitochondria of ADP is high and the concentration of ATP in the muscle is high, which is where we want it. We want that gradient. We want that difference. So in the muscles, when we need a lot of ATP, it's readily available. We can use it. But there's not a lot of ATP sitting around the mitochondria backing up the electron transport chain. So in that sense, you could think of creatine as almost like an antioxidant because it stops the formation of a superoxide-free radical. And so that's another thing. It'd be anti-aging. And I think that's cool, too. I didn't know that either about creatine. I learned that just, you know, studying this. Did you know that?
I've seen stuff on anti-aging. It just, I don't know, the research doesn't seem to be that convincing to me.
Well, that's how it works. It just makes your body produce less superoxide-free radicals. That's how it is.
Well, creatine's involved in, like, the least efficient energy system of our bodies. We're not really using creatine when we're using, like, fat oxidation or even glycolysis, which is the two primary sources of our energy throughout the body. So the whole creatine thing, yeah, it might help out a little bit. I just don't know if you're really going to notice that much of a difference.
Yeah, and it's not hurting. I'll say that much. It's definitely not. And another thing it can do is kind of act as a pH buffer. So we say pH, we're talking about acid. And when we're talking about acid, we're talking about like hydrogen ions. So creatine also helps shuttle hydrogen ions in the right locations. So we want a high concentration of hydrogen ions in the mitochondria, specifically the intermembrane space, because that gradient, that high energy as far as high hydrogen ions in the intermembrane space, low in the inner mitochondrial space, the inner matrix of the mitochondria, that energy is used to pump ATP synthase to make ATP. But we don't want that hydrogen ions in the cytosol of the muscle, because you all know that burning we feel when we train, the lactic acid buildup. And again, that might not be correct. It might be lactate and the associated hydrogen ions with it, but that can hinder performance. So keeping the hydrogens where they're supposed to be, high in the mitochondria, low in the muscle, is another way that creatine can support, you know, endurance, support just muscles, and support your workouts. Yeah, another thing I wanted to touch on as far as creatine and water, so it helps hydrate your muscle cells. So for every molecule of creatine your muscles uptake, they'll increase with three other molecules of water, so like 1 to 3, very similar to glycogen. So that can help. Honestly, if you're just looking in the mirror, as far as aesthetics, if you're not, you know, super chubby, if you don't have a lot of fat on you, that extra volume in your muscles will make you look better. And also, just a hydrated muscle is a healthy muscle, so it can send out hormones as far as for anabolic hormones to grow. If your body's dehydrated, especially your muscles dehydrated, it's not going to want to grow, so you want to get those anabolic signals out of the muscle. So having a healthy, hydrated muscle is a good thing. And it also helps with increasing the contractile power of the muscle cell, each individual muscle unit. And that's another reason how creatine can help with strength. Your muscles will literally just contract harder, and it can make you lift heavier weights. And I think we can talk about, as far as which supplement to take, we recommend just taking creatine monohydrate. There's other versions out there like ethyl esters and some other like buffered creatine, but all the studies done on creatine have all been done on creatine monohydrate. So just stick with that. It's over 90% absorbable by the body. It's super cheap. You'll get a tub for like $15. It'll last a few months. And just supplementing with 5 grams seems to be the recommended dose. You don't need to take more than that. Some people might say there's like a loading phase where you take 20 grams for the first week or two. And that can be beneficial that first week as far as it helps saturate the muscle cells more quickly. But I personally don't see a reason to do that. If you just stick with 5 grams, you'll eventually saturate your muscle cells, and that's what you're looking for.
So especially if you're eating muscle meat on a regular basis, too.
Like yeah, if you're eating steaks or anything, whatever, chicken breast, something like that, you're going to be getting creatine from that as well.
Yeah, if you're a vegetarian, you might want to increase that. And it's 3 to 5 grams is like the recommended dose. So if you're a big person, definitely up towards that 5 grams. And if you're doing some like high intensity workouts, definitely go up to that 5 grams. But if you're, you know, a small, say 100-pound person doing a lot of like running, nothing like sprints, probably don't really need 5 grams.
Well, if your diet's on point, then yeah, you probably definitely don't. Yeah. But you're right. If you're not a big meat eater, you know, that's just not, and again, if you're vegetarian or vegan, of course, then I would recommend supplementing with it. But if you're going to, I don't know, eat 2 pounds or so of muscle meat a day, then there's no real reason to supplement with creatine because your body's going to be getting more than enough. It's going to be getting more than that 5 grams. So, I mean, sure, you could. I don't know what harm it's going to do, but there's really not a point. You know, you might just be wasting money at that point. But if you're not eating, you know, a couple pounds of meat a day, then supplementing with that 3 to 5 grams seems to be the ideal dose.
Yeah, so like a normal person, if you eat 1 to 2 pounds of meat a day, you should be fine. You don't really need to supplement with creatine unless you are trying to be the best athlete in the world at like a powerlifting event or like the best sprinter in the world. Then yes, you will get benefits from creatine. And it's been studied for, I don't know, close to 200 years now, and there's very little negative side effects with it.
Yeah, very small.
The only ones have been some like GI issues, which seems like that's going to be true with damn near every single supplement. You're going to have some sort of GI issues, and I don't know if that's actually from the creatine or if that's from...
what's with it.
Yeah, most likely what's with it.
And also, creatine, like we said, it's very polar, so it draws water to it. So creatine sometimes in your stomach can draw water to it, can cause a little bit of bloating, and obviously like gastrointestinal issues, but... that's very case specific. Some people experience it, some people don't. If you do, then you might want to take it in the morning with just anything. Just take it like empty stomach. Maybe that'll be a little better for you if you find that taking it with food kind of causes you to bloat a little bit. But you'll have to find that out on your own to see what kind of dosage protocol works for you. You want to go to the tip of the week?
Sure. All right, so the tip of the week this week is, it's called pre-exhaust. I don't know if there's another name out there for it. There probably is. So I know probably a lot of people, if you lift weights on a regular basis, you probably ran into this issue. You go in, it's chest day, you hit bench press. Damn it, your triceps blow up, get all pumped up, and you don't feel anything in your chest. So the rest of your workout, you're just destroying your triceps and you barely feel it in your chest. So the way to work around that, you can do this for any muscle group, chest, back, whatever, is you start off with a single joint exercise that's pretty much going to isolate that major muscle that you're trying to work for. So for chest, you want to do flies. A single joint exercise means you're only moving from one joint. So when you're doing like a fly, you're only moving your shoulders. Your elbows shouldn't be moving. It's just your shoulder. So pretty much the only muscle that's working is your chest. You are working a couple other muscles, but not to an extreme amount.
Compared to like a bench press where you are going to be activating your delts and your triceps.
Yeah.
All that.
Yeah, I mean, you're
way
still,
more.
You're still using deltoids. You're still using triceps, biceps, all your forearm muscles. You know, you're using a lot of accessory muscles, just not to the same extent. For back, it would be, you can either do like reverse flies. The way that you hit those kind of depends on what muscle you're going to hit. So if you do like a lower lat fly, making sure you're squeezing your shoulder blades together. That'll isolate your lats pretty good. Another one is cable pullovers, where you just go to where like the lat pull down is, stand up, straight arms, go to like shoulder height, lower it down to your hips. Just a single joint, your shoulder joint's the only thing that's moving. And then after you do those, then you move on to the multi-joint. So you do flies, then to bench press. that by that point, your chest is already good and pumped. So after that, you're just going to be destroying your chest. You probably won't even feel your triceps that day. Same thing with back. When you go on to pull-ups or lat rows, you're not going to feel your biceps tightening up. All that pain, all that pump is going to be in your back, all in your lats.
I start every back workout with pullovers. Every back workout.
I did that for a while. For the most part, if I can do pull-ups first, I'm always going to do pull-ups first. I always start with whatever the hardest lift is. Mm-hmm. That way I'm 100% for that first lift.
Yeah.
I do that occasionally, though, if I want to mix things up a little bit. Just kind of just depends on the day.
Yeah, I haven't done... Well, I guess I recently did do pull-ups again, but ever since I tore like my bicep doing pull-ups, I'm like gun-shy to do pull-ups now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple reasons why you might be... Your muscles might be firing wrong. Either you just didn't warm up properly, your biomechanics might be a little off. Maybe your elbows are a little bit more flared out than they should be. Possibly you're just, the way you're recruiting your muscles is wrong as well. Or maybe you've used your triceps a little bit more that day, so they're going to fatigue a little bit earlier. There's a lot of variables that can go into it. So this is just one little simple trick to make sure that, you know, you're hitting the targeted area. You're going there for a chest day, not a tricep day.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's a good tip. That's definitely a good technique everybody should do out there. Incorporate it into your routines, and hopefully it helps stimulate some more growth. Well, that's another episode in the books. I think that's episode 19. Thank you for listening. Again, you can find us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at tntwellnessandnutrition@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at tntwellnessandnutrition. So reach out.
Yeah, look for our logo. It's the flexing bicep inside the blue heart. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.